Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Hey, this is great.
Freedom, yes, freedom, not cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back, everybody. It's hour two, time for Toker Talk Radio, where we're not going to take your calls today. I'm not going to take calls today because I got to do other segments because I played that professor's speech in the first half hour. So, I'm gonna do the talking. Besides, tomorrow we've got Kevin P. Saunders calling in. He is a proponent, I believe a proponent of MCLR, who's going to have 8 uninterrupted minutes to convince y'all that I am wrong about my support for the Sean Parker Initiative, and that instead you should vote against that, and you should instead vote for true legalization with MCLR. Or maybe it's CCHI, or maybe it's one of the other five. I don't know. But whatever it is, it's not Sean Parker, not the one that already has over $1 million behind it and the support of the lieutenant governor and, you know, two major drug reform organizations and legalizes pretty much what Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Alaska have legalized, except in the ways that it's better. Forget that. Vote against that and pick something that's not funded. But anyway, you'll get to hear from him. I shouldn't put words in his mouth, right? You'll hear from him tomorrow at 4. 8 uninterrupted minutes of true legalization coming at you on tomorrow's show. And that follows our extended interview tomorrow with Mark Emery and hopefully also Jody Emery on the show. We'll have plenty to discuss, probably in that same perspective of true legalization. Mark's got some pretty strong opinions on it. And wanted to thank everybody who was reaching out to me on my last couple of articles from my trip to Idaho on Tuesday, where I got a fun welcome from the Bureau of Probation and Parole, I believe it is, BP or BPP or MPP or OPP, you know me, I'm not sure who it was, but they pounded on my motel door at 11:30 at night. And you can read all about that at marijuanapolitics.com. Look for the articles with the chickens on them. Which, by the way, a chicken can be a hen or a rooster. Somebody wrote to me and said, oh, you used a picture of a rooster. Well, yes, a rooster is a chicken, just like a man is a human. Okay, so chicken, then hen, rooster. Anyway, and quick note also, Oregon news. Apparently they're storming and breaking up the whole protest out there, the Bundy Ranch, the Yalcata, the Vanilla ISIS, they're busting them all up there. We already had the traffic stop that resulted in the shooting that killed one of the occupiers and wounded some other. But now apparently they're storming into the place. And Wiz Calico is on my chat, on another private chat with me, and he's saying there's a rumor that the Bundy occupiers there were smoking pot. Smoking pot out there in the middle of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge that they had stormed and taken over in protest of the federal government, daring to prosecute people who burned public lands and taxes and government's bad or something. Anyway, if they were, it was one of the few legal things they were doing. It is legal to smoke pot in Oregon. I got nothing. These occupiers wanted to smoke some pot. Good on you. Just, geez. Well, not legal in a federal building. Legal in the state of Oregon, but not legal in a federal building. So let's be clear about that. Raw story reporting that a few militant stragglers remain. I got in a discussion with someone else who was talking about how sad it was now. In the traffic stop, they arrested most of the leaders of the thing, so the only people left are kind of these followers who, comparatively speaking, relatively and absolutely speaking, not the brightest members of the occupation. So, it's a special kind of thing living out west sometimes. When we come back, we've got some drug war data mining, a great poll for the District of Columbia on marijuana legalization and buying and selling marijuana.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I said, on this program, what do they want? My grandchildren and the monster. Oh, did I scare you?
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All right, in the Drug War Data Mine today, we take a look at a report from the Washington City paper. That would be Washington, D.C., and it's the D.C. poll. D.C. residents were recently polled by D.C. Vote and the Washington City paper and found that 66% agreed that the mayor of Washington, D.C. should try to find a way to allow the city to tax and regulate marijuana like it does alcohol. The question was, although marijuana is legal to possess in the district, and remember, Washington, D.C. legalized 2 ounces of marijuana. You can have 2 ounces on hand. Although marijuana is legal to possess in the district, Congress has blocked the district government from allowing marijuana to be taxed and regulated like alcohol. If a legal method were available for the mayor to allow marijuana to be taxed and regulated like alcohol, despite the congressional ban, should the mayor pursue it or not? 66% yes, 25% no. So we got 2/3 of DC residents saying, yes, if it's legal, we should be able to buy and sell it. We should be able to tax and regulate it. Another question asked, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? When Congress blocks a successful D.C. ballot initiative or referendum that has been approved by the voters, D.C.'s elected officials should use all legal means to implement the measure anyway. 79% agreed. Nearly 4 out of 5 said, if the federal government interferes with Washington, D.C.'s home rule, Washington, D.C. should use all legal means to fight back. And this is a long-running theme. You know, Washington, D.C. has more population, and I think I'm remembering this correctly, than 4 states. I know it's got more population than Wyoming, right? But I think Washington, D.C. is more populous than 4 U.S. states. It certainly deserves better representation. And being this, you know, beholden to the whims of Congress basically means these people are taxed without representation. And that's, in fact, the motto on their license plates in the district: taxation without representation. So there was another question, and another question about Washington, D.C. is, where can you smoke pot? Because public use, like all the legal states, is prohibited. No public display of marijuana. So they asked the question. As you may know, D.C. residents voted to legalize adult marijuana use, but some landlords prohibit renters from using marijuana in their home, and renters who use marijuana can be evicted. Some district lawmakers have called for the creation of regulated places where adults can consume marijuana without fear of arrest or eviction. Would you support or oppose a law creating regulated places where adults can legally consume marijuana? 61% support. So over 3 in 5 district residents say there ought to be pot clubs. There ought to be some place an adult can smoke pot. And really, if we're giving people a right to smoke pot, and that's what the right to possess is, come on. It's not just so you can have it, obviously. It's so that you can use it. If we have the right to use pot, but we don't provide a legal place to enjoy that right, what good is the right? It reminds me of when you pass the 15th Amendment and black people have the right to vote, but then you make a whole bunch of poll taxes and literacy tests to make sure they can't. Oh, yeah, you have the right to possess marijuana and smoke it so long as you own your own home. And that can't be right. There were more questions on the DC poll. Do you agree or disagree with the following statement? Since Congress has blocked the district government from taxing and regulating marijuana, marijuana legalization is just another reason why Washington, DC should become its own state. 63% agreed with that statement. So marijuana legalization, this is not just a fringe issue. This is something that district voters just add to another long list of complaints of how Congress interferes with their ability to regulate themselves and why Washington, D.C. should become another state. There were some more marijuana questions. The next question: although possession of personal amounts of marijuana was legalized by D.C. voters in 2014, people in D.C. caught with small amounts of other illegal drugs for personal use are arrested and incarcerated, even for a first offense. In your view, are these drug possession laws too harsh, too lenient, or just right? 60% say that personal drug possession laws that involve arrest and incarceration for a first offense are too harsh. 60%. Again, 3 in 5 district residents who think, for any drug, if you've got a personal amount on you, why are we bothering to arrest and incarcerate you? So this is good news as we look through Washington, D.C. and other moves that it is making to try to join the rest of the country, in the other states, I should say, that are legalizing marijuana. Currently, their grow and give system allows people to be able to grow their own marijuana at home and possess up to 2 ounces of it and freely give it to one another. And I wonder if the Congress that is so opposed to this doesn't understand how they are unintentionally helping to foster what they hate. Even among these people that are anti-marijuana, a lot of times they will even concede, we're not against the person who's just smoking a joint on their own time in private. That's not, we want to get those dealers. We want to get those guys that are selling the marijuana. That you know, the drug dealers, the big bad drug dealers. But even by that measure, what they're doing is completely counterproductive. When Washington, D.C. legalizes the possession and the cultivation and free sharing, quote unquote, of marijuana, it just became miles easier to be an illegal marijuana grower who sells weed. You can possess it. You can run around possessing it. Used to be, if you were holding enough marijuana, that could be possession with intent to deliver and you could get busted. But now, you can hold up to 2 ounces of it. Now you've got a whole customer base that once they've gotten the marijuana in their hand, isn't afraid of being busted. Nothing you can use against them to get them to roll over and snitch on who sold it to them. The whole world of underground marijuana dealing just became a whole lot easier and less risky. It's actually a better market for the person selling bags. This is the folly of decriminalization wherever it's tried. Decriminalization being the idea of let's not punish the possessor, the small-time user. We'll just give him a slap on the wrist, if anything. And of course, Washington, D.C.'s would be the greatest decriminalization you could possibly have. That is, it's legal to possess and to grow and to share. But without legalizing the market to go with it, you've just now made a whole new, much emboldened customer base for the current illegal dealers. So by continuing to block DC's attempts to tax and regulate the buying and selling of marijuana, you continue to allow the buying and selling of marijuana to be conducted by the criminal element that raises no money for the district that you want to be self-sufficient, I would presume. Another interesting side note in the poll, and this is has nothing to do with marijuana, but it asks the question as to whether or not the mascot name for the Washington football team, which is a dictionary-defined racial slur, do they consider that racial slur to be offensive? These are residents of Washington, D.C., for whom that racially slur football team plays, their fans, 58% found it offensive. 58% of the people in Washington, D.C. consider the Washington, D.C. NFL team's name offensive. Remarkable, huh? All right, we're going to be taking a break here at 20 after, and a reminder here that on tomorrow's show, half past in the first hour, we're going to be talking with Mark Emery and hopefully also Jody Emery from Vancouver, British Columbia, the cannabis culture headquarters, and Pot TV and all that. We'll also have a 8-minute segment featuring Kevin Saunders, a follower of mine on Facebook who thinks I'm completely wrong about supporting the Sean Parker Initiative, and I've agreed to let him speak for 8 minutes uninterrupted on why we should oppose the Sean Parker Initiative. And then, if necessary, afterwards, I'll debunk whatever falsehoods might have come across. Going by his posts, man, if he's going to bring the stuff that he's been posting on Facebook, it's going to be pretty entertaining. So stick around for that. And this, of course, is our penultimate show from Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon. I'm looking around at an empty studio, nothing on the walls, boxes full of equipment and packing stuff and all the gear, getting ready to put that into a storage unit over the weekend. That's how I'll be spending my 48th birthday on Sunday. That's right. I turned 48 on Sunday. And I don't know. I guess that's a good age. Good thing. I'll be, washing walls and cleaning toilets and mopping floors for my birthday and watching the Pro Bowl, I suppose. Should be a good time. From then, we're going on the road, folks. It's going to be fun.
Well, what the hell are we supposed to do, you moron?
Yeah, we're heading on the road. I will be in San Francisco on Valentine's weekend. Not going to make it to the Cannabis Cup next weekend. The Sean Parker people wanted to have a Californian defending them, and I understand that, so they couldn't raise the expenses for me. So we'll see you in San Francisco for the International Cannabis Business Conference. Check them out at internationalcbc.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolut, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
At midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Well, the push is on by the supporters of marijuana prohibition. They know 2016 is their Waterloo, with five states potentially voting on legalization. And now we know for sure Florida will once again be voting on medical marijuana. Nevada's already on the ballot for legalization. And we've got entries for medical in Ohio and Missouri that have good shots. And possibly legalization via a legislature in Vermont and another initiative try, a couple, two, three of them, I think, in Michigan. So 2016, it's all happening. And if there's going to be any chance for them to get pushback, to slow the momentum, this is the year it's going to have to happen. So we here at Cannabis Radio will be covering all of this reefer madness as it develops throughout 2016. And the latest one comes from an Associated Press piece. I've seen it also picked up on ABC News already. And that's about how Colorado legalized weed. Now all these illegal drug dealers are growing weed amongst all the legal weed, and they're supplying it out of state. It opens up talking about a skydiving business that put Colorado pot in their planes and flew it to Minnesota. A Denver man who filled 100 pot-filled FedEx packages for Buffalo, New York. 20 other drug traffickers from Cuba, relocating to Colorado, growing marijuana to send to Florida, where it gets twice the return, and so forth. And it frames this as being something that could be helpful to the Supreme Court lawsuit of Nebraska and Oklahoma, who say that Colorado's pot legalization should be unconstitutional because it sends a tide of illicit weed across their borders. The Obama administration asked the Supreme Court not to hear the case because the fact that weed gets out of Colorado is not Colorado's fault. But this is going to be one of the big pushes, is that, see, you legalized in Colorado, and now all these drug dealers that want to get their weed other places, why, all they got to do is be in Colorado, set up shop, and then they can sell it and traffic it and get it out of state as easily as they want. By gum, we want to keep weed illegal here in Florida. But then people go to Colorado and then they send it to Florida and gosh darn it, we can't keep it illegal. That's just making us so angry because we want to keep something prohibited in this state. And these other states, my God, why they have these more liberal policies. And if we can't keep the pot out. We can try as hard as we want to keep the pot out and it's not going to work because these other states have such liberal policies on it that it can't help but get out because there's a demand for pot here in Florida or Idaho or Nebraska or wherever the hell. People here keep wanting it and, well, they can get a lot more money for it here because it's illegal here. It's harder to get here and they can go to Colorado and get it real easy. Then they bring it over to our state and, you know, they just sell it and make a whole lot of money. Folks, think about that entire scenario I just laid out to you, except change Colorado and weed to Virginia and guns, or Texas and guns. And again, I don't want to be on the one side or the other of the gun debate, but I'm just trying to make the point that if there's people out there who make the claim in these conservative states that, by God, we want to prohibit weed, and you got have these liberal policies on weed, easy access to weed that prevents us from prohibiting weed, then that same logic's got to work for guns. You have a place like Washington, D.C. or California that wants to try to ban guns or certain types of them. And then you got states like Texas or Virginia that has more liberal policies on it. And people can make money by exploiting that difference in policy. And there's no stopping it from coming from, you know, Chicago and Indiana. Same deal there, right? Chicago wants to have a more strict gun policy, but they can't maintain it because Indiana's got such liberal laws. So how about we come to a compromise? We could call it the Redneck Hippie Compromise of 2016. or the Stoner Patriot Act. Stoner / Patriot Act, right? And I mean patriot in like U.S. patriots, not like the spying law, right? The Stoner Tea Party Act, whatever you want to call it, okay? And what it will say is that we recognize that there has to be a national level of regulation on both weed and guns. We have to recognize that what we've done in this country with respect to both of those consumer goods that there is an unquenchable demand for, in both cases, trying to regulate them state by state has been fruitless. And that in both cases, we need to have some national level standards so that everyone can share the same sort of right from state to state to state. Marijuana is safer than guns. I can see the new tagline. We can have new sets of bumper stickers. Marijuana is safer than guns. Whatever law there is for how well we can possess guns, that ought to be the law for weed, right? Like if you're in an open carry state and you can have, you know, 30-round magazines and that kind of stuff, then you ought to be able to grow a 2 dozen plant garden and possess a half pound at any time, right? Marijuana is safer than guns. What, you're going to let me tote around an AK-47 with a magazine over my shoulder in public and I can't have a half pound of weed, right? Conversely, if we're going to be in a Chicago where you can't have a handgun, you can't have this or that, then okay, then you can't have weed either, right? I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. It's just something that vexes me that there seems to be this inconsistency in how we evaluate the situations, right? It's like, are we going to be states' rights or not? Are we going to be federalists or not? You know, whichever way we're going to pick, let's pick and then, you know, move on. But it's strange to me. Now, of course, you know, people will bring up, Russ, guns are in the Constitution. Guns and the right to bear arms is in the Second Amendment. Yes, I know. I read the thing. And I happen to know that the drafts of it were written on hemp paper by hemp farmers who traded seeds for psychoactive strains of cannabis. So, yeah, guns are like written into the Constitution in the amendments, by the way. They weren't in the first part, right? But the drafters of the document and the paper it was written on itself are weed. So I think we got a constitutional right to weed. And I don't say that lightly. I say that based on the Ninth Amendment. I think we have a Ninth Amendment right to smoke weed. The enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights is not meant to deny or disparage others retained by the people. That is to say, the people have some rights. We didn't write them all down. Just because the Constitution wrote a bunch of rights down doesn't mean that's all the rights. We got to have some other natural, inalienable rights. And I think if you're a country founded by hemp farmers in an agrarian society, then farming has to be one of those natural rights. It has to be. I can't see how it would not be a natural right among those people. So, yeah, we've got a constitutional right to smoke pot. And if we can recognize that, it's a personal constitutional right to be able to farm and use the products that you farm, whether it's pot or not. Everybody's got a right to plant seeds and sow crops. That's my belief. And if we were to recognize that, like we've recognized an individual right to bear arms, then we wouldn't have these silly disputes. The problem that we've got, if there's a problem here for these states, isn't Colorado's legalization, it's their prohibition. When Florida wants to bitch about, oh, these dealers from Cuba went to Colorado and set up shop, and then they sent all this weed to Florida, what motivated them to do that? What motivated them to go to all that effort? The profit they could make. If those guys are pissing you off, the reason it should piss you off is not because you can't stop them. It's because you're not making a cut on it. Inga Frickland, the LEAP speaker that I spoke with in Boise on Tuesday, had a great line where she said, cats like catnip. Cats are just wired to like catnip. Other species don't like catnip. It's no big deal to them, but cats and catnip are wired for each other. And similarly, humans like to alter their perceptions. You wouldn't try to prohibit cats and catnip, right? You just recognize it is, right? And the same with humans. We like to alter our consciousness. Always have. We were drinking beer before we were making bread. The first thing we figured out how to do with wheat was beer, not bread. We've always tried to, it's a natural part of being human. Not all humans do it, at least with chemicals. But almost all humans do it with something. They find a way to alter their perceptions, to alter their mood. Some of them do it through extreme exercise. Some of them like to gamble. Some like, you know, watching soap operas, whatever it might be. Everybody's got a little of it in them. It's natural. And it will cause problems for some. Just like some people will overexercise, some people will eat too much, some people will be too promiscuous and risky. And we got to try to find a way to minimize the damage from those things, certainly. But what we don't do is add more damage to it by making it a crime that it isn't, by adding a criminal justice layer that doesn't need to be there. We should use our criminal justice system to stop us from harming others, not what we do to ourselves. And if you believe in freedom, you have to believe in the freedom to make bad decisions too. We can't be a society that forces people to have to do good, because then you don't know that they're doing good, whether they're doing good or just complying. And then the next time you're not paying attention to them, will they continue to comply? No, freedom means we have to accept that people make different choices. And some of those choices are bad choices. Some of those choices may be choices we don't like. But if you don't tolerate alternative lifestyles and tolerate people's choices, to the extent that you can minimize the damage they cause others, then you just have to build more prisons. And that's what we've learned in the past 35 years in the United States. That's how we've accomplished getting the largest prison population in human history. Not just per capita, not just overall numbers, not just modern times. We are the prison country, the prison empire of all recorded human history. That's what we've learned from our intolerance and our ignorance and our inability to recognize reality of who we are and what we are. All right, we're going to be back with some behind the headlines and a look at religious use after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Voober way.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we're taking a look at the lawsuit that has been filed by the Oklavu Native American Church. The person filing the suit is Joy Graves, who's an adherent of the church out here in Oregon. And the lawsuit is concerning the church or church members trying to send ounces of marijuana through the U.S. Postal Service to another church member in the state of Ohio. Now, the church member in the state of Ohio, it is claimed, has cancer, and that the sending of the cannabis was the sending of sacramental herb used in ancient Native American healing practices, and that the U.S. government stopping them from using the mail to send ounces of weed to Ohio amounts to an unconstitutional infringement of their First Amendment rights to practice their religion free from government interference, as codified also by the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act signed by President Clinton. All right, so there's the facts. That's the setup on this. Now you got to start thinking about some of the particulars. The first thing is just the practical aspect of it, right? This is somebody asking the federal government to have the right to be able to send weed in the mail to a state where it's not legal, from a state where sending it outside the state is illegal, and where sending it across state lines is illegal, but that they should have the right to be able to do that because they believe that it's a holy herb. Okay, so naturally, if this case were to go their way, it would mean that people who believe herb is holy could then mail it anywhere. And presumably, the people who receive it would be free from any sort of prosecution. If you won a lawsuit like this and went to the Supreme Court and was upheld, you'd basically uphold the right of anyone who believes herb to be holy to be able to, you know, grow it and possess it and mail it to anyone they want who also believes that it's holy. Now, this would be awesome if it passed, wouldn't it? If this got through the courts, wouldn't this just be awesome? Holy people could send holy herb back and forth all across the country as much as they wanted to. Now, of course, it does bring into question, what is it that proves that you think herb is holy? Well, there's all sorts of tests there, isn't it? How do you know that I'm legit? How do you know that I'm just some guy who wants to, you know, send weed to people? That I don't really believe weed's holy. I'm just going to say that it's holy. I'm just going to fake it. I'm going to say weed's holy. And then I'm going to send weed to people in Ohio. And they'll say it's holy too. How do we prove whether or not they actually find it to be holy? In fact, there's so many people out there that like weed and would love to be able to send it to their friends back and forth across the country. Don't you think, like, almost everybody would claim that they think herb is holy? So, how would we prove it? Well, maybe you'd have to be a member of this church, this Oklavu church. You'd have to be a member of it. And maybe, you know, in order to join that church, I don't know, what there's a, is there an application fee? Is there a cost to it? Is there a requested donation? I mean, in other words, if the court decided this way, that yeah, so, you know, sending weed across country using the mail is perfectly cool as long as you're holy, but the only way we can tell you're holy is if you're a member of this particular church, boy, that would be a real financial benefit for that particular church, wouldn't it? You'd have a lot of people wanting to join that church, wouldn't you? And for many of them, they wouldn't really give a shit about whether herb's holy or there's a spirit or, yeah, sure, it's holy. There's a spirit. Here's your $50. Is that what you want your religion to become? Some sort of whore for people that want to use it to be able to trade herb across the country? I mean, that's one aspect of the whole religious church thing that just bothers me. And the other aspect is if that is the litmus test for me to avoid being prosecuted for my use of herb, how is that not government respecting an establishment of religion? If the government maintains there's a particular penalty for a particular act, but that penalty does not apply to people who belong to a particular church, how is that not violating the First Amendment? How is that not giving a special right based on one's religious affiliation? What if only Amish people were allowed to rob? Right? If you're Amish, you can steal. It's okay. If you're Amish, you can steal. That'll be fine. We'll let that crime go. We'll punish everybody else unless they're Amish. I can bet that a lot of thieves would start having funny little beards and suspenders and black hats, right? That's one of my problems with this. And they refer back to this Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and there's a couple of cases that were decided on it that had to do with Native Americans that wanted to use peyote and Brazilian Indians who wanted to use ayahuasca, a very psychoactive tea. And both of those cases were decided for the religions. Because, again, we're talking about whether or not these people could use this particular substance. And when they do these, they go to the courts, the tests. Believe it or not, there's two tests. There's one called the lemon test, and there's one called the sherbet test. Sherbert. There's a lemon test, and there's a sherbet test. Honest to God. And they have to do with these, you know, these points that have to be proven, basically, or logic thought trains that you have to go through to be able to make these decisions. And it has a lot to do with a balance. Like, okay, we want to have it so that people can practice their religion and government doesn't mess with them for that. Okay. So if Muslim women want to wear a hijab and, you know, the government's saying they got to take it off for their driver's license photo, we got to talk about that, because is the government overstepping its bounds, right? You know, the government's got a legitimate interest to make sure we can identify people on government documents and such, but that religion has a particular strong interest among many of its women that it is immodest and unholy to not cover hair and just show the face, right? So how do you balance that? Should the government be able to force them to take that thing off to get a driver's license, or should they have their religion respected? Because how much does wearing the thing stop the objective of the government? Like, we can still identify a woman by her eye color and the way her face looks, and especially more and more as we have facial recognition technology, being able to see your hair doesn't make much difference. Now, you start throwing the veil in there, and all we can see is the eyes. Now, maybe we've got a different question, right? But the only reason I bring that whole thing up is to provide another comparison for us to understand that when the government looks at these religious test questions, they got the same sort of test. The government's got compelling interests in enforcing the law and keeping people from harming one another, but also religions have a compelling interest in practicing their faith in a certain way without interference. So the big obvious one would be to say, well, you belong to an Aztec death cult that believes in sacrificing virgins to the volcano god. But the government has the compelling interest to protect citizens, including virgins, from being murdered. And that, you do the balance, and it's really the government wins on that one. You can't have a religion where, an Aztec religion, where you can sacrifice virgins, because the government's got to stop people from murdering people. But then when you get to the question of the ayahuasca or the peyote, the government's compelling interest is stopping people from doing drugs. Now, we can argue that that's wrong, that it shouldn't be their compelling interest, but right now it is. And it's under statute and treaty that it's their compelling interest. So the foundation might be suspect, but you have to accept the foundation exists right now, and the government's compelling interest is to stop people from doing harmful, dangerous drugs, of which peyote and ayahuasca are Schedule I, the most dangerous drugs that there can be. Even though that's not true of those drugs either, that's what the law says. So their compelling interest, stop people from doing peyote and ayahuasca. The Native Americans and the Brazilian Indians, their compelling interest is, hey, this is a spirit guide thing. This is a hallucinogenic trip from which we gain much spiritual awakening and connection with the, you know, the whole whatever it is. I'm not a religious guy, but that's their argument, right? And the courts came down and did the test, and they said, well, you know what? How, just like if the woman kept the hijab on, would we still be able to identify her? Yes, we would. So she can keep the hijab on. If we had to pick people that were seriously religious about peyote and ayahuasca, would we still be able to figure it out? Yeah, because they belong to these small little churches of very defined belonging. Like, you have to belong to a tribe, and those are, you know, federally, you know, registered Indian tribes and all of that kind of stuff, right? So we have a pretty strong way of saying that you're not just faking it to make it. And ayahuasca and peyote aren't popular. Not a whole lot of people do those drugs. So it's not going to really stop the federal government from stopping the other people from doing those drugs, because not a lot of people do them in the first place. So that's how the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is applied to these hallucinogenic substances. The problem is the cases so far that have come before the courts that have to do with cannabis do that same balancing test, and they find, uh-oh, the problem is it's not, one, it's not reasonably easy to identify who are the members of a particular cannabis church, because there's so many of them and so many people that start the healing church, the herbal church, Bob's House of Pot, whatever they call them. So it's hard to identify which churches are legit, and far too many people smoke pot, like 28 million people smoke pot. And if we let these few religious people smoke it, how are we going to keep out the other 27, 28 million people who also want to smoke it from claiming that they're suddenly religious? Letting the Native Americans use ayahuasca and peyote doesn't stop the government from keeping ayahuasca and peyote illegal, because it's such a small, tiny thing. But marijuana is the most used drug there is. Letting one small group, that's like the hole in the dam, and then the whole dam bursts. Which is kind of what's going on in Colorado as compared to Kansas and Nebraska and Oklahoma. The dam is bursting. I just don't see how the religious way works. And as an atheist, it just kind of offends me that you're trying to get special rights for yourself that we don't get.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development, and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolut, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too. NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back here, and we're going to close things out for the hour, but thanks for joining us. We're here every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and replays on demand on CannabisRadio.com. Also, shout out to my friends at 420Radio.org, Herb Thrasher and Timmy Harris, still running the show out there at 420Radio.org. Be running the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour tomorrow night live on 420Radio.org. If you're into heavy metal, join me and Herb Thrasher for that. 8 p.m. Pacific time, Friday and Saturday nights on 420radio.org. As we close, I got some news from Herb Thrasher, who pointed me to a story coming out of Limestone County, Alabama. Limestone County, Alabama is one of many counties, many school districts, that subjects their students to random drug testing. And so, according to the story, they've been drug testing school athletes, grades 9 through 12. So your high school athletes, freshman to senior, subject them to random drug testing. And Rusty Bates, who I will refer to, Rusty Bates is the district's safety, athletics, and transportation director. Henceforth, we shall call him Mr. Bates. Mr. Bates said, quote, "We felt like that was missing the mark, that it was very ineffective," end quote, because, now check this out, check the logic here. They would only test about 100 students a year and would receive little to no positive results. 100 students a year, little to no positives. Mr. Bates says it would be naive to accept that as a true representation. Quote, "It'd be foolish to not think drugs are apparent in some of our schools, in all of our schools," end quote, said Mr. Bates. So you tested 100 kids, you didn't get enough positives. Well, that can't be right. Certainly our kids are doing drugs. Of course they're doing more drugs than this. The small number we're getting back can't possibly be true. Well, what's the point of your testing then, if you don't believe the testing? Well, that's the thing, is he didn't believe the testing. He thought the testing wasn't going far enough. Ah, we're only testing the high school athletes. So the other kids using drugs must not be high school athletes. So what we got to do, according to Mr. Bates, is to expand the drug testing program to the 7th and 8th graders, to all student participants in any extracurricular activity, band, chess club, drama, Future Farmers of America, whatever, any extracurricular, swim team, whatever it is, math club, gay straight student alliance, whatever it might be, we're going to drug test you. And all students who drive to school and apply for a parking permit. So if you're anything, if you go to school on the school bus, we won't drug test you. If you go to school on the school bus, we won't drug test you, but only if you don't participate in school in any other way but the bare minimum of going to school and learning, we won't drug test you. And if that wasn't bad enough, it had been up to this point that the kids had to go to a third-party location, some drug testing facility, to get tested. Now, they're going to do it on campus. They're going to do your piss test at the school if you want to be a seventh grader on the in the chess club in Limestone County, Alabama, according to Mr. Bates. So, of course, the justification he says, Mr. Bates says, quote, "When peer pressure strikes down, I want them to use us as an out for saying, hey, I'm not going to do this," end quote. This is the old peer pressure is so hard to overcome that the only way they can overcome it is if they're afraid of some punishment that we will mete out against them. No, you know what the drug testing does? Is it diverts the kids away from the marijuana and toward the alcohol and the prescription pills that don't show up as easily on the tests. It also fosters a sense of distrust between the students and their administrators, and takes kids that might be developing a problem or at risk of developing a problem, and takes them away from what we know keeps them away from drugs, and that is extracurricular activities, a feeling of belonging and acceptance. And instead, we isolate and punish them. If these kids test positive, the seventh graders, you know, trying out for the chess club, they are suspended from their extracurricular participation for a year. A full year, they have to be out of chess club or band. Gosh, I wonder what those kids caught doing drugs are going to do with all that extra time. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seat, you plant it.
you grow it, you dye it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dye it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dye it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.